Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, joined by Jim Garrity of National Review. Jim was off yesterday doing Glenn Beck TV. Jim, I only have one question. Did one or both of you cry at any point in this interview?
No, they didn't break out any onions to cut. I was with perhaps the most right-wing panel I've ever been on, because besides Glenn, it was former Senator Rick Santorum and Ann Coulter joining us by remote from New York. So I think my accusations of Rhino could be cast aside after hanging out with that crowd. I'm feeling my conservative votes this morning. I hope every listener to the Three Martini Lunch subscribes to the Morning Jolt, because I try to describe just how amazing the set is. I'll keep this brief, but basically this is the largest studio for movies between New York and L.A., and Beck has just transformed it into this, like, fun house for political geeks. And you can see some of it online, but it just is this, you know, just it looks like nothing else on television. And I kind of walked away really kind of gobsmacked, as Andrew Sullivan might say, by just the scale of it all and the ambitions that Beck has for what he wants to do down there. So good time is had by all.
Excellent. Well, we're glad you're back. Glad you had a good time. On to martini number one now, the good martini. And Jim, I'm pretty sure the four of you that were there did not vote for Barack Obama in 2008. But obviously, right around 70 million people did. And fortunately, at least a sizable chunk of those people are regretting that vote. And that leads to a new campaign of whyichangedmyvote.com. The only name anybody will probably recognize on there is former Alabama Congressman Artur Davis, who famously switched from Democrat to Republican. The rest on there are people, some who have been independents and gone different ways in different elections, others lifelong Democrats who are now voting for Mitt Romney. And here's just a clip from the web video on this about why these people are fed up with this current president.
As great as he was as a campaigner, he's been that bad as a president.
It's more debt. It's more division.
He doesn't know how to work with other people.
He's not a good leader.
I can't say there's been any positive change.
Things are just still a mess.
And it's more dishonesty.
He'd say one thing, but then he'd turn around and do the opposite.
Jim, I don't know how many people are still on the fence in this campaign, but I think people who at one time supported Barack Obama could potentially have greater credibility than, say, you or I, who have never been big fans of his, for people who are still trying to figure out which way to cast their ballot this year.
That's really kind of a fascinating tone to that commercial there, because a lot of the ads we've seen kind of pitching to this demographic is kind of more in sorrow than in anger, almost apologizing for not voting for Obama. Kind of, he meant so well, and he tried so hard, but just it just doesn't seem to be working out. And I still believe in everything, you know, he wanted to do. He had this great vision. It just hasn't come true. That kind of taps into a bit of anger of, we got fed a line of BS in 2008, and either this guy never intended to deliver all those lovely, happy, you know, visions that he had, or he doesn't know how to deliver it, or he never intended to deliver it. One of the points that was made yesterday in our discussion, it was kind of fascinating, is that people are disapproving of the job Obama is doing on the economy. But when they asked who has a more appealing vision for America's economy, people are still saying Obama, which is the sort of response that makes you want to find the respondents, track them down, and shake them vigorously and say, what the heck are you thinking? But Ace of Spades had observed something, which is Obama, you know, look, what was the key to Obama's appeal? It's always these pretty pictures he paints with words about how great things are going to be someday. And occasionally he'll get nailed down on one that someday is, as in, if I don't get this thing fixed, it's going to be a one-term proposition or something like that. But this is it's always just over the horizon. It looks so pretty and it sounds so good, and kids will be going to school and the windmills will be generating energy and you know, everything will be kumbaya and harmonious, and it all sounds great, but it never seems to get here. And in fact, here we are 4 years later, and you know, most people don't feel like we've gotten any closer to that happy vision at all, and in fact things have gotten much worse. By the way, I should note, Greg, that in this future it will not belong to those who slander the name of the Prophet Muhammad, as Obama let us know in that UN speech. I really hope that what this ad and this message and this whole theme of why I switched my vote, I hope it's catching on out there. I think Obama voters, the folks who are not the diehard Democrats, but the folks who saw him in 2008, heard his message, saw the country in a really rough spot and said, boy, this guy, you know, what a, this guy sounded a great thing about bringing Washington together. And in his inaugural address, he talked about putting away childish things. I guess you could say golf clubs are not a childish thing. You know, the same guy who's running, you know, a million negative tack ads talks about how he wants to bring us together, et cetera. It's, you know, it's been a very frustrating presidency. And it's good to see some ads that are kind of channeling some of that frustration and putting it right on the president and making him accountable for what he is, you know, his record that he's accumulated over the past 4 years.
On to martini number two now, Jim. And we are in a fairly polarized political state in this country, in case anyone hasn't noticed. Most issues are not lopsided in the polls, but one of them is, and that is voter ID in these states where Republicans have pushed it forward in the last few years. It nationwide, I think it was even a Washington Post poll showing 75% of Americans think this is a perfectly legitimate way to ensure the integrity of elections. Of course, Democrats are feeding us a line of bull about, you know, this is going to disenfranchise people, all these millions of people who have no form of ID for some reason. Nonetheless, these states have moved forward and done it. Pennsylvania was another one, until today, where a federal judge blocked the state from enforcing its strict voter ID law before the presidential election, citing disenfranchisement concerns. It comes just 5 weeks before the election. It could still be appealed, but basically the judge is worried that all the changes can't be made before Election Day. So Pennsylvania, your ballots are not going to be quite as legitimate necessarily, or at least it'll be more open to fraud than some of these states where it's going to go forward with making folks bring forward the photo ID.
Greg, in related news, the Campaign Spot Decision Desk is now calling the state of Pennsylvania for Barack Obama. And Tom Smith falling short in his effort to oust incumbent Democrat Senator Bob Casey. Really fantastic turnout in Philadelphia for Casey. We're looking in the neighborhood of 150 to 200% of registered voters coming out in support of that. Look, everyone who wants to eliminate fraud ought to, you know, also recognize that if you are who you say you are, you should be able to vote. And, you know, we should try to make it, if you are who you say you are and can prove who you are who you say you are, we should not make it hard for you to vote. And one of the things that the state was saying is that, look, if you show up to the vote and you don't have a valid ID, you have, you know, they have a provisional ballot, meaning that, look, we're going to take this ballot, you can cast it, we're going to put it aside, come, go back and find your ID. Find some way to prove to say you are who you say you are, and we will put your provisional ballot in with the rest of them once everything checks out. That strikes me as unbelievably basic, because basically the argument of the Democrats and the argument of this judge is that the state has no right to try to check that you are who you say you are. I mean, this is a de facto legalization of voter fraud, because basically they're saying as long as you really insist you are who you say you are, that they can't take it out. And it's just it's baffling. Now, he's understanding he's worried about confusion over the rules, et cetera, et cetera. Look, I understand voting is a right. I also remember having this argument back in 2000 when we talked about dimpled chads and all of that kind of stuff. Don't voters have a certain responsibility to follow instructions? I mean, we don't just get to say, well, I really want it. You know, the argument of the Gore campaign back then was your intent is enough. If you tried to vote, it doesn't really matter if you didn't push through all the way or you didn't fill in the spot all the way. You know, even there on the ballot, it has explicit instructions right there. This is how you cast a vote. If you don't follow the rules, the argument of the Gore campaign was, well, you wanted to, and that should be close enough in the eyes of the law. I think that's spectacularly wrongheaded. And what we're seeing here is if you want to vote, the state really can't ask that much of you at all, even what strikes me as fairly basic requirements, such as, you know, prove you are who you say you are, because otherwise we don't want people casting more than one ballot. The passion with which Democrats fight these laws strongly suggests that suspicions of voter fraud are not as conspiratorial minded or far fetched as you know some may think. That if this really was, you know, a small problem, that they would not be fighting this tooth and nail. And so instead of this, they're fighting these laws as if the election depended on it, which probably should tell you something.
Yeah. Apparently Judge Robert Simpson has never met James O'Keefe. Perhaps there is some secret videotaping laws against that in Pennsylvania, but apparently he's never had James O'Keefe be handed his ballot. And perhaps if he had, he might have looked at this a little bit differently. But on to martini number three quickly. And Jim, we know that the president of the United States, if you know Congress won't do what he wants, has no trouble just issuing executive orders that he's not really allowed to do. We saw it with the recess appointments. We saw it with rubbing out the work requirements for welfare. We saw it with his Dream Act for young illegals. Now there's another one. According to the Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act, contractors are required to give workers a 60-day notice if they are about to be laid off. The across-the-board budget cuts that are coming through sequestration that could happen in January apparently fall under the requirement, but the White House disagrees and is begging contractors not to do it. And why? Because that 60-day notice would fall just before the November election. So never mind that pesky law, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really spectacular example of how Democrats believe that laws are, you know, optional, that they don't really need to follow them if it is politically inconvenient. I actually think the original law that if a company believes it is facing a mass layoff, has to try to give advance warning to its workers. I think it's a good idea for a labor rule for that, because while I understand that businesses are dealing with changing, you know, business conditions and sudden drops in sales and certain things that are not foreseeable, there's few things in life more traumatic than getting laid off. And you want to give your worker as much warning as possible, as much time to, you know, start socking away a little bit in savings and maybe start looking around at options for other jobs and stuff like that. It just seems like a decency and fair play suggests that if you think you're going to have a massive, you know, layoff of workers, you got to, you know, let your workers, you know, try to adjust their lives to cope with that sudden change to their economic conditions and their employment conditions. In the case of the White House, this law, which had this perfectly good common sense and, you know, vaguely lefty help the workers motivation behind it, can and should be waived when it's politically inconvenient to the administration. I remember I wrote this back in the probably around 2009, the early days of the Obama administration. And people were saying, was Obama a craven guy? Was he a far lefty guy? Trying to classify him, and I think probably one of the simplest ways of understanding Obama is, what is he going to do every day? Whatever he needs most. You know, he is a very, very flexible guy. There's this line in Alinsky's Rules for Radicals about, you know, people who worry about whether the ends justify the means get to sleep soundly with their angel wings under their beds, kind of dismissing this worrying about whether the ends justify the means. I get the feeling in Alinsky's world, the end always justifies the means. That's kind of frightening philosophy for a president to have. In the end, if you have to, you know, break a few eggs to make an omelet, if you need to tweak this, if you need to ignore laws, you need to bend rules, you need to work around them, you need to, say, check the signatures and get all of your opponents thrown off the ballot to launch your political career, you do it, because in the end, nobody's ever going to remember, nobody cares. It's remarkably cynical, and I think this is just one more example of that mentality of this White House.
Jim, you think he's flexible now? Just remember, if he wins, he's going to have even more flexibility.
I will transmit that to Vladimir.
Jim, welcome back. Great show. Talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And remember to join us again on Wednesday at the same time for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.